Theroux was staring at her. A wave of warmth, heat, seemed to flow from the child, as if she were in fever. She said nothing, but moved her lips as if repeating the name, and that fever heat burned around her. "Trix," Moss said. "Now that our mage is gone, there'll be all kinds of tricksters coming round." "I came from Atuan to Havnor, from Havnor to Gaunt with Sparrowhawk in an open boat," Tenar said dryly. "You saw him when he brought me here, Moss. He wasn't Archmage then, but he was the same man. Are there other scars like those?" Confronted, the older woman became still, collecting herself. She glanced at Theroux. "No," she said, "but do you think I wouldn't know him?" Moss twisted her mouth, frowned, rubbed one thumb with the other, looking at her hands. "There's evil things in the world, mistress," she said. "A thing that takes a man's form and body, but his soul's gone, eaten."
"The Gebbeth?"
Moss cringed at the word spoken openly. She nodded. "They do say, once the mage Sparrowhawk came here, long ago, before you came with him, and a thing of darkness came with him, following him. Maybe it still does. Maybe..." "The dragon who brought him here," Tenar said, "called him by his true name, and I know that name." Wrath at the witch's obstinate suspicion rang in her voice. Moss stood mute. Her silence was better argument than her words. "Maybe the shadow on him is his death," Tenar said. "Maybe he's dying. I don't know. If Ogeon..." At the thought of Ogeon, she was in tears again, thinking how Ged had come too late. She swallowed the tears and went to the woodbox for kindling for the fire. She gave Theroux the kettle to fill, touching her face as she spoke to her. The seamed and slabby scars were hot to touch, but the child was not feverish. Tenar knelt to make the fire. "Somebody in this fine household, a witch, a widow, a cripple, and a half-wit, had to do what must be done, and not frighten the child with weeping. But the dragon was gone. And was there nothing to come any more but death?" Bettering. He lay like the dead, but was not dead. Where had he been? What had he come through? That night, in firelight, Tenar took the stained, worn, sweat-stiffened clothes off him. She washed him and let him lie naked between the linen sheet and the blanket of soft, heavy goat's wool. Though a short, slight-built man, he had been compact, vigorous. Now, he was thin as if worn down to the bone, worn away, fragile. Even the scars that ridged his shoulder and the left side of his face from temple to jaw seemed lessened, silvery. And his hair was gray. "I'm sick of mourning," Tenar thought. "Sick of mourning, sick of grief. I will not grieve for him. Didn't he come to me riding the dragon?" "Once I meant to kill him," she thought. "Now, I'll make him live if I can." She looked at him then with a challenge in her eye and no pity. "Which of us saved the other from the labyrinth, Ged?" Unhearing, unmoving, he slept. She was very tired. She bathed in the water she had heated to wash him with and crept into bed beside the little warm, silky silence that was Theroux asleep. She slept, and her sleep opened out into a vast, windy space, hazy with rose and gold. She flew. Her voice called, "Galesin!" A voice answered, calling from the gulfs of light. When she woke, the birds were chirping in the fields and on the roof. Sitting up, she saw the light of morning through the gnarled glass of the low window looking west. There was something in her, some seed or glimmer, too small to look at or think about, new. Theroux was still asleep. Tenar sat by her, looking out the small window at cloud and sunlight, thinking of her daughter, Apple, trying to remember Apple as a baby. Only the faintest glimpse, vanishing as she turned to it, the small, fat body shaking with a laugh, the wispy, flying hair, and the second baby. Spark, he got called, as a joke, because he'd been struck off flint. She did not know his true name. He had been as sickly a child as Apple had been a sound one. Born early and very small, He had nearly died of the croup at 2 months, and for 2 years after that, it had been like rearing a fledgling sparrow. You never knew if he would be alive in the morning. But he held on. The little spark wouldn't go out. And growing, he became a wiry boy, endlessly active, driven. No use on the farm. No patience with animals, plants, people. Using words for his needs only, never for pleasure, and the give and take of love and knowledge. Ogeon had come by on his wanderings when Apple was 13 and Spark 11. Ogeon had named Apple then, in the springs of the Cahida at the valley's head. Beautiful, she had walked in the green water, the woman child, and he had given her her true name, Heohi. He had stayed on at Oak Farm a day or two, and had asked the boy if he wanted to go wandering a little with him in the forests. Spark merely shook his head. "What would you do if you could?" the mage had asked him. And the boy said what he had never been able to say to father or mother. "Go to sea." So after Beach gave him his true name 3 years later, he shipped as a sailor aboard a merchantman, trading from Valmouth to Oranea and North Havner. From time to time he would come to the farm, but not often, and never for long, though at his father's death it would be his property. He was white-skinned like Tenar, but grew tall like Flint, with a narrow face. He had not told his parents his true name. There might never be anyone he told it to. Tenar had not seen him for 3 years now. He might or might not know of his father's death. He might be dead himself, drowned, but she thought not. He would carry that spark, his life, over the waters, through the storms. That was what it was like in her now, a spark, like the bodily certainty of a conception, a change, a new thing. What it was she would not ask. You did not ask. You did not ask a true name. It was given you, or not. She got up and dressed. Early as it was warm, and she built no fire. She sat in the doorway to drink a cup of milk and watch the shadow of Gaunt Mountain draw inward from the sea. There was as little wind as there could be on this air-swept shelf of rock, and the breeze had a midsummer feel, soft and rich, smelling of the meadows. There was a sweetness in the air, a change. "All changed," the old man had whispered, dying, joyful. Laying his hand on hers, giving her the gift, his name, giving it away. "Aye-how," she whispered. For answer, a couple of goats bleated out behind the milking shed, waiting for Heather to come. "Bah," one said, and the other, deeper, metallic, "Blah! Blah!" Trust a goat, Flint used to say, to spoil anything. Flint, the shepherd, had disliked goats. But Sparrowhawk had been a goat herd here across the mountain as a boy. She went inside. She found Theru standing, gazing at the sleeping man. She put her arm around the child, and though Theru usually shrank from or was passive to touch or caress, this time she accepted it, and perhaps even leaned a little to Tenar. Ged lay in the same exhausted, overwhelmed sleep. His face was turned to expose the four white scars that marked it. "Was he burned?" Theru whispered. Tenar did not answer at once. She did not know what those scars were. She had asked him long ago in the painted room of the Labyrinth of Atuan, jeering, "A dragon?" And he had answered seriously, "Not a dragon. One of the kinship of the Nameless Ones. But I learned his name." And that was all she knew. But she knew what burned meant to the child. "Yes," she said. Theru continued to gaze at him. She had cocked her head to bring her one seeing eye to bear, which made her look like a little bird, a sparrow or a finch. "Come along, finchling, birdlet. Sleep's what he needs. You need a peach. Is there a peach ripe this morning?" Theru trotted out to sea, and Tenar followed her. Eating her peach, the child studied the place where she had planted the peach pit yesterday. She was evidently disappointed that no tree had grown there, but she said nothing. "Water it," said Tenar. Auntie Moss arrived in the mid-morning, One of her skills as a witch handywoman was basket-making, using the rushes of Overfell Marsh, and Tenar had asked her to teach her the art. As a child in Antoine, Tenar had learned how to learn. As a stranger in Gaunt, she had found that people liked to teach. She had learned to be taught, and so to be accepted, her foreignness forgiven. Ogeon had taught her his knowledge, and then Flint had taught her his. It was her habit of life to learn. There seemed always to be a great deal to be learned, more than she would have believed when she was a apprentice priestess or the pupil of a mage. The rushes had been soaking, and this morning they were to split them, an exacting but not a complicated business, leaving plenty of attention to spare. "Panty," said Tenar, as they sat on the doorstep with the bowl of soaking rushes between them and a mat before them to lay the split ones on. "How do you tell if a man's a wizard or not?" Moss's reply was circuitous, beginning with the usual gnomics and obscurities. "Deep knows deep," she said, deeply, "and what's born will speak." And she told a story about the ant that picked up a tiny end of hair from the floor of a palace and ran off to the ant's nest with it. And in the night, the nest glowed underground like a star, for the hair was from the head of the great mage, Brost. But only the wise could see the glowing anthill. To common eyes, it was all dark. "One needs training, then," said Tenar. "Maybe, maybe not," was the gist of Moss's dark reply. "Some are born with that gift," she said. "Even when they don't know it, it will be there. Like the hair of the mage in the hole in the ground, it will shine." "Yes," said Tenar, "I've seen that." She split and resplit a reed cleanly and laid the splints on the mat. "How do you know, then, when a man is not a wizard?" "It's not there," Moss said. "It's not there, dearie. The power. See, now, if I've got eyes in my head, I can see that you have eyes, can't I? And if you're blind, I'll see that. And if you've only got one eye, like the little one, or if you've got three, I'll see him, won't I? But if I don't have an eye to see with, I won't know if you do till you tell me. But I do. I see. I know. The third eye." She touched her forehead and gave a loud, dry chuckle, like a hen triumphant over an egg. She was pleased with having found the words to say what she wanted to say. A good deal of her obscurity and cant, Tenar had begun to realize, was mere ineptness with words and ideas. Nobody had ever taught her to think consecutively. Nobody had ever listened to what she said. All that was expected, all that was wanted of her, was muddle, mystery, mumbling. She was a witch woman. She had nothing to do with clear meaning. "I understand," Tenar said. "Then, maybe this is a question you don't want to answer. Then, when you look at a person with your third eye, with your power, you see their power or don't see it?" "It's more a knowing," Moss said. "Seeing is just a way of saying it. It isn't like I see you. I see this rush. I see the mountain there. It's a knowing. I know what's in you, and not in that poor hollow-headed heather. I know what's in the dear child, and not in him in yonder. I know..." She could not get any farther with it. She mumbled and spat. "Any witch worth the hairpin knows another witch," she said finally, plainly, impatiently. "You recognize each other?" Moss nodded. "Aye, that's it. That's the word. Recognize." "And a wizard would recognize your power, would know you for a sorceress." But Moss was grinning at her, a black cave of a grin in a cobweb of wrinkles. "Dearie," she said, "a man, you mean a wizardly man? What's a man of power to do with us?" "But Ogeon..." "Lord Ogeon was kind," Moss said, without irony. They split rushes for a while in silence. "Don't cut your thumb on him, dearie," Moss said. "Ogeon taught me, as if I weren't a girl, as if I'd been his prentice like Sparrowhawk. He taught me the language of the making, Moss. What I asked him, he told me. There wasn't no other like him. It was I who wouldn't be taught. I left him. What did I want with these books? What good were they to me? I wanted to live. I wanted a man. I wanted my children. I wanted my life." she split reeds neatly, quickly, with her nail. "And I got it," she said. "Take with the right hand, throw away with the left," the witch said. "Well, dearie mistress, who's to say? Who's to say? Wanting a man got me into awful troubles more than once. But wanting to get married? Never. No, no, none of that for me." "Why not?" Tenar demanded. Taken aback, Moss said simply, "Why, what man'd marry a witch?" And then, with a sidelong chewing motion of her jaw, like a sheep shifting its cud, "And what witch'd marry a man?" They split rushes. "What's wrong with men?" Tenar inquired cautiously. As cautiously, lowering her voice, Moss replied, "I don't know, my dearie. I've thought on it. Often I've thought on it. The best I can say it is like this. A man's in his skin, see, like a nut in its shell." She held up her long, bent, wet fingers as if holding a walnut. "It's hard and strong, that shell, and it's all full of him. Full of grand man-meat, man-self. And that's all. That's all there is. It's all him and nothing else inside." Tenar pondered a while and finally asked, "But if he's a wizard, then it's all his power inside. His power is himself, see? That's how it is with him, and that's all. When his power goes, he's gone, empty." She cracked the unseen walnut and tossed the shells away. "Nothing." "And a woman, then?" "Oh, well, dearie, a woman's a different thing entirely. Who knows where a woman begins and ends? Listen, mistress, I have roots. I have roots deeper than this island, deeper than the sea, older than the raising of the lands. I go back into the dark." Moss's eyes shone with a weird brightness in their red rims, and her voice sang like an instrument. "I go back into the dark. Before the moon I was. No one knows, no one knows, no one can say what I am, what a woman is, a woman of power, a woman's power deeper than the roots of trees, deeper than the roots of islands, older than the making, older than the moon. Who dares ask questions of the dark? Who'll ask the dark its name?" The old woman was rocking, chanting, lost in her incantation. But Tenar sat upright and split a reed down the center with her thumbnail. "I will," she said. She split another reed. "I lived long enough in the dark," she said. She looked in from time to time to see that Sparrowhawk was still sleeping. She did so now. When she sat down again with Moss, wanting not to return to what they had been saying, for the older woman looked dour and sullen, she said, "This morning when I woke up, I felt, oh, as if the new wind were blowing, a change. Maybe just the weather. Did you feel that?" But Moss would not say yes or no. "Many a wind blows here on the Overfell, some good, some ill. Some bears clouds, and some fair weather. And some brings news to those who can hear it, but those who won't listen can't hear. Who am I to know, an old woman without mage learning, without book learning? All my learning's in the earth, in the dark earth. Under their feet, the proud ones. Under their feet, the proud lords and mages. Why should they look down, the learned ones? What does an old witch woman know?" She would be a formidable enemy, Tenar thought, and was a difficult friend. "Auntie," she said, taking up a reed, "I grew up among women, only women, in the Kargish lands far east in Atuan. I was taken from my family as a little child to be brought up a priestess in a place in the desert. I don't know what name it has. All we called it in our language was just that, the place, the only place I knew. There were a few soldiers guarding it, but they couldn't come inside the walls, and we couldn't go outside the walls. Only in a group, all women and girls with eunuchs guarding us, keeping the men out of sight." "What's those you said?" "Eunuchs?" Tenar used the Kargish word without thinking. "Gelded men," she said. The witch stared and said, "Tsek!" and made the sign to avert evil. She sucked her lips. She had been startled out of her resentment. "One of them was the nearest to a mother I had there. But do you see, Auntie, I never saw a man till I was a woman grown, Only girls and women. And yet, I didn't know what women are, because women were all I did know. Like men who live among men, sailors and soldiers and mages on rope. Do they know what men are? How can they, if they never speak to a woman? Do they take 'em and do 'em like rams and he-goats, said Moss, like that with a gelding knife? Horror, the macabre, and a gleam of vengeance had won out over both anger and reason. Moss didn't want to pursue any topic but that of eunuchs. Tenar could not tell her much. She realized that she had never thought about the matter. When she was a girl in Atuan, there had been gelded men, and one of them had loved her tenderly, and she him, and she had killed him to escape from him. Then she had come to the archipelago, where there were no eunuchs, and had forgotten them, sunk them in darkness with Manann's body. I suppose, she said, trying to satisfy Moss's craving for details, that they took young boys and... But she stopped. Her hand stopped working.